This is Pivot Perspectives with Chris O'Byrne, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet. Hear their stories and get the most important business lessons they've learned on their road to success, and get exclusive access on how to implement their success into your life and business. Pivot Perspectives is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Chris O'Byrne.
Melanie Hershore, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to start by going back to your childhood, because we all have things that helped us sort of develop into who we are today. They were, whether it's an event or a series of events or something from childhood. So what was something from your childhood that helped you develop into who you are today?
Well, I always felt... Now, this is a long time ago, Chris, because I'm 44. So we're going back like into the last century here. But I always felt invisible. I felt like I had all these giant aspirations to be a star. And it was kind of like, okay, just be a good girl. Do your homework, get straight A's, you know, do and... one day be a doctor. and that just didn't fit for who I was or who I am. So what I didn't realize was how profound an impact that would have on me as an adult. And I had to really work through a whole lot of head trash, because I thought that, you know, I'm never going to be what I want to be if I'm not the quote unquote professional that my family expects me to be. And thankfully I've worked through it. I make jokes about it now, so I know I'm okay. But I mean,
so
yeah.
How did you work through the head trash? Because we all have our different approaches.
Not use any illicit drugs, which is good because I don't do that. I kind of had a come to Jesus moment, and it wasn't that long ago. It really wasn't that long ago. It was about a year ago, where I had a conversation with one of my parents, and it just set me off, and I was just crying, and I didn't really understand the gravity of what I'd been like living with almost. And then I realized that I had internalized my parents' beliefs about what success looks like. And so when I was able to say, hold on, that's not how I feel, I was able to let it go.
Yeah, that's good, because a lot of people, again, they take all sorts of approach stuff out, and usually it's some triggering event that kind of forces the issue. So let's go from like your big picture story of you graduated high school. What did you go through, and what was your journey up to where you're at now?
Holy moly, it was not linear. High school graduation, that was a very long time ago, but fun. And I went to college. I went to University of Toronto because I was living in Canada, so it made sense to go to a Canadian school, monetarily so. And I studied history because there was nothing else that I could think of that was going to be as interesting to me as history, because what I really wanted to do, my parents, you can't do that. I wanted to be a journalist. And I wanted to work in entertainment, something to do with it. And I said, you know, I want to go study whatever, communications or, you know, something to that will get me closer. And they said, well, so they asked some friends. Now, it sounds like I'm blaming them, and I don't mean to. I'm just telling you the series of events. So they asked one friend that they had who worked at one place and whose advice they took as gospel. And they told me, well, if you want to be a journalist, you need to learn everything about the world ahead of time. So you need to study history. And I went, okay, I guess I will. So I looked at the history courses, and I really was so in. I was so interested. I remember sitting on the subway and reading through the course syllabus. You know, there's this. This was in the 90s, right? So things were printed because the internet was still new, and so it was like this thick book with made of newsprint. I remember, and I'm reading through it and looking at all the history classes and going, oh, that's so interesting. Oh, I'd love to learn about that. And I got so excited that I went, I think I'm going to study history just like they told me to. So I did. And I honestly, I do not regret that for one moment, because when I graduated high school, I thought I knew everything. And then when I started college, I realized I knew nothing. And so that was very eye-opening and wonderful. And now, you know, I can tell you lots of very interesting facts that you might or might not know about things that happened in early modern Europe. I care. But also, I think it opened up the world to me in a way that that studying communications would not have. So when I graduated from college, I was dating a guy long distance. He was living in Los Angeles and I was in Toronto, and I decided I was moving. I was out of there. I was leaving Canada for good and I was moving to LA. And I was talking to a dear friend of mine, childhood friend, and I said, you know, I really don't know what I'm going to do when I get out there. And she said, why don't you try public relations? I said, what's that? She goes, you know, just look into it. I think you'd be really good at it. And you know, it's like the universe gives you these guides and you don't even realize that that's because I literally still do public relations to this day, and if not for my friend Tracy, I don't know that I would have even approached it. So I managed to get myself an internship at a boutique celebrity PR firm that I then parlayed that into a job. And I was walking red carpets with celebrities. I was even on a reality show on Bravo that year. And so it was really exciting and very also not exciting, because there's the exciting part, which is the red carpet, and then there's the not exciting part also, which is like dealing with unhappy, angry comedians. And that's the thing about comedians. You think that they're happy because they're making you laugh, but they're probably very,
no, I've heard stories.
Bitter people in a lot of ways. Not all. I'm not going to say all, but definitely some of the ones I had to work with. All I have to say, on my birthday, I think it was my 24th birthday, I was at work and a famous comedian told me off twice. She was yelling at me about something that I hadn't done. And I went, I think I'm done with this. I don't think I want to do this anymore. I think I want to do something where people respect me and the work that I'm putting in. And here's a weird thing that happened. I got a call from my mother not long after that happened. And she said, and remember, I'm living in LA at the time and she's in Toronto, and she says, I found some post-it notes where you were writing about graduate schools in like journalism graduate schools, and you were taking notes. So I just wanted to give those to you. I said, where did you get those? She said, oh, I found them in your old room. I said, those are seven. I hadn't even thought. I had been toying with the idea. Maybe I go back to school. Maybe I get a master's in journalism. And here she calls me holding post-it notes that I had written 7 years prior about possibly going to a master's in journalism. So again, Hi, universe. And
Oh man.
yeah, so I started applying to schools and I got into the University of Southern California, and that definitely changed the trajectory of my career because I graduated top of my class. I could say that. I got an award for it. I cried. I was very happy. And I made wonderful connections and I officially felt like a journalist. And so when I moved to Pennsylvania after graduation, that's where my husband was living. So we were apart for the first year of marriage. So
Is this the same guy you moved to LA for?
no, turns out the guy I
Okay.
moved to LA for went to high school with my husband. They
Oh,
knew each other. That's how
interesting.
I met my husband originally, was through the guy I moved to
Oh,
LA for.
nice.
Yeah. So I mean, if you look back on your life, there's always like a through line and you
Oh,
can,
yeah.
yeah. So gosh, this is a long story, Chris.
I love it. You keep going.
Okay. So
People love stories.
true. Oh, I agree. I don't know how exciting mine is, but I did get the first job I applied to out of graduate school. I applied to the local NPR affiliate in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and they had an opening for classical music announcer. And I had no idea how to do that, but I figured, well, it's an, and they saw that I mean, I had no radio experience at all. Oh, that's not true. I was on the radio in undergrad. I was on the radio in undergrad. That was my only experience in radio. But they hired me. And
So
so,
please tell me that you were one of those people who were on the fun drives.
oh
You know
God,
those
was
skits they
I
used to do
ever?
on
Are you
Saturday Night
kidding?
Live?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. We appreciate all of our listeners. And it's because of listeners like you, Chris, that we're able to bring you these programs that educate you, that entertain you, but we need your money. So call
That's
1-800, give us money.
beautiful.
1-800, give us money right now. Yes. So did a lot of those. You know what ends up happening is the people in the radio booth were all bananas by the end. We're all like giddy. There were so many. I was like uncontrollably laughing and would have to like contain it so that I could go live on the air. Yeah, those are fun. So they moved me after about 8 months. They had an opening in news. And I got the job. And so then I was the afternoon news anchor and reporter. And it was amazing and stressful. And I did it for a couple years. And I was, you know, I was newly married, so I wanted to have a baby, right? I was ready. I was 31 at the time, and I was like, I want to have a baby. So I planned as much as you can plan to have a baby in a non-election year so that I wouldn't, I know I was in a newsroom with all men. Men didn't get it.
It makes sense, though.
So I actually did. I successfully had a baby in a non-election year. However, when I was 5 months pregnant, they laid me off.
Oh my goodness.
So,
What was the reason?
oh, budget cuts. At the time,
So
the
it's
governor of
because you were
Pennsylvania,
pregnant.
yeah, well, of course, but because there were a bunch of other people getting laid off, you know, it's funny. That's a
Yeah, why
PBS
not?
station, right? It's funny with like PBS, you think kids, yeah,
Yes.
they lay off. I was like the fourth or fifth pregnant woman to get laid off from that station. And I wasn't even on their health insurance. But anyway, you know, it all comes from
I'm
the
sure it
top
was
down.
coincidence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, it all comes from the top down. Well, that's all I'm going to say about that. And so then I became the story. And I was having to field calls from reporters who wanted to find out why Melanie Hirshhorn was laid off from WITF. Because, and that was weird. I didn't like being the story, like reporting on the story, not being the story. Then I got a call from the managing editor of the newspaper in Harrisburg. And she said, "Can you come work with us?" I said, "Kate, I'm 5 months pregnant." She goes, "I know. I don't care." And I freelanced. I mean, it was pennies, but it was amazing. My first day on the job, I got the above the fold front page story.
Oh, that's
Because,
impressive.
thank you, because the children in the Harrisburg School District had no pencils to take their tests. So the school district was in a shambles, and I was their freelance school district beat reporter. So finally helped my ego, which had crumbled into nothing when I got laid off.
So I'm curious, and this is a
Yeah.
tangent on Harrisburg. I
Sure.
remember when I was young, Three Mile Island
Yeah.
and that whole fiasco. Was that still affecting in some way? Were there repercussions of that event on the news or the system at all?
Well, you still, and of course, this was like 12, 14 years ago, but sure. I mean, anytime there was the anniversary of Three Mile Island, anything going on at Three Mile Island, that was always in the news, certainly. It wasn't
Okay.
the only thing, though, because there's a lot of drama in that area. I always say Pennsylvania is the most interesting state because there's so much going on that unless you live there, you have no idea. I mean, I've lived in Arizona years, and it's not that exciting here, but in Pennsylvania, oh my goodness. There are so many controversies and things where you're like, whoa, how did that happen? It's wild.
Crazy.
So would you like me to
Oh,
continue this crazy journey?
yes. So now you're,
So
yeah,
now I'm
keep
at the
going. This is
newspaper.
great.
I'm at the newspaper, and my husband and I are looking to leave Pennsylvania because he was done his training and we could leave. And so he got a job in Phoenix and we moved. And when I got here, I thought, well, I could try to get a job as a reporter and pay a nanny more money or pay a daycare more money than I'll ever make as a journalist.
Yeah.
Or I can try something else. And I'd had this idea. And I couldn't shake it. And it was to design and manufacture things.
Remember hearing about this.
So
Yeah, completely related to what you were doing.
completely. But you know what's interesting is it is. And I'll tell you why. Now, of course, I've had a long time to look back with binoculars on this, but my whole purpose on this planet is to take people who are feeling kind of bad about themselves in whatever way, whether it's an underdog that doesn't get their story reported, or a new mom who feels like trash and just wants to feel good about herself, even though her body is still not her own. And now what I do, which is helping authors who want to get their message out in the world and they just don't know how. So this is the through line of I love to support people. It makes my heart shine. So back to, I guess I can say, cut to breastfeeding clothing. So I know what I was doing and I Googled my way through it. Google University, and I did it. I literally did it. I was at the biggest trade shows standing on the floor by myself. I sold my clothes on Nordstrom.com. My stuff
Oh my
was up
goodness.
there. Yeah. And on Amazon and on in boutiques in Canada and the US. Like I was doing it. I was not necessarily doing it correctly. I should have asked for help, but I didn't. And when I did ask for help, I learned a very valuable lesson. Because that help ended up driving my business into the ground, and I had.
Okay, how did that happen? There's a
So,
good lesson here.
oh, yes. So, I was doing these in order to get sort of celebrity endorsements, I was doing these gifting suites. Are you familiar with these? Celebrity
Not
gifting
really,
suites.
no.
Oh, they are.
No.
When you go in as a publicist, they're amazing because you just get to be treated like a celebrity. But when you go in as one of the vendors, you're basically setting up a trade show where you give away all your stuff in exchange for comment, retweets or photos with celebrities and such. So it's the celebrity goes from table to table to table. And they say, "What do you do?" And then you say to them, "Well, I have this really great thing I'd love for you to try. Hey, can I get a picture with you?" And they're like, "Sure, thanks for your free thing." That's what it is. Oh, you look
Wow.
very, yes, you look very like you have a lot of questions about this.
No, I'm just trying, I'm picturing it, and it just seems so bizarre and so California.
It's very California. I mean, you'll also see just something that I have seen recently is that authors will post about how they got their book into the Emmy gift bag or into the Grammy gift bag. And so here's how it works, guys. You pay money, and then you get your stuff in there. So you pay money to do it, then you pay for your product, then you pay to ship your product, then if somebody puts it in the bag. Do you know what happens to those gift bags? Guess, Chris,
Garbage,
guess. Hmm?
dumpsters.
I hope nice stuff. In my experience, now granted, this is just my few years in the business, they give them to their assistants. They re-gift the stuff. They don't necessarily read it or use it. I mean, it's a nice idea that, oh, so and so has your book, but they may
It's all
not.
about bragging rights.
It is. It is. And if that's what you want to do and you can, put that in your marketing budget, then that's great. I think also one of the things I want is for people to know everything before they go into something because I value honesty and knowledge very much, which will take me back to what happened with this person. So she was running a gifting suite. And then a few years later, I'm doing marketing for baby brands and you need my help. And I went, all right, tell me more. And she sold me a whole bill of goods. And I went, oh, you know what? You're right. I do need that. And unfortunately, I did not need that. Over the course of a year, I paid her about $25,000. I had 7,000 Instagram followers who were not buying my clothes. But the worst part of all was how manipulative and emotionally abusive she was to me.
Oh.
And I have this bad habit of putting people up on a pedestal when they demand that I do. And I'm really working on that because that's how I get manipulated. Is by when somebody tells me they're an expert and I investigate and I see that, oh, yes, they must be. So then I listen to them and then I go, wait a second. Find your intuition again. So in the end, I couldn't go into my office door. Like I couldn't open the office door. And the office was in my house. And it wasn't a big house. I just couldn't open. I couldn't go into the room. I couldn't even like face my business. I was so just wrecked. And I decided to close the business because I realized that, there were several things. At the time, millennial moms had stopped wearing what I was producing and they were interested in getting fast fashion that they could just throw out later. So I could see that piece of it. And I was just emotionally wrecked. The things that she would say, Melanie, how do you have a master's degree? You're so boring. You're writing it all. And I started to believe it.
Yeah.
I started to believe it.
Wow.
My husband was like, but you're paying her. And I said, I know, but I'm afraid. What if she tries to ruin me, smear my, do a smear campaign online? Of course, now I know better, but then I didn't. I was deeply entrenched. If you've ever seen, now this is a bit of a tangent, but there's a documentary I watched about this entertainment impresario named Randall Emmett, and he's the ex whatever of a reality star, and he was on a reality show. The whole point, though, is that he ran a very shady operation in Hollywood, and he would get his assistant to do all sorts of insane things. He had an assistant fly a card table to some place that they were because the card table that they had wasn't a good enough one for their poker game, and also had another assistant go and get a bunch of cocaine out of a I don't know, a safe in a hotel room, and the assistant could have been arrested. And all this to say, the assistant was so brainwashed to believe that this is okay and this is how it's done, and if I don't measure up, then I'm gonna lose everything. It's that feeling.
Wow.
And so I felt that too. And having worked in that entertainment business, I know what that's like. You think that if you don't do the stupidest, most minute things, your life is ruined. That's the mentality of it. And so I easily slipped back in when this Hollywood woman was doing it to me. Does that make sense?
It does. And this is really, again, very valuable to anybody who's going to be listening or reading, because I bet you there are a lot of people who are going through this right this second.
Especially with marketing, because there are so many people that will sell you things that you want to hear and they don't deliver. And they never will, but they'll take your money. And so when I closed the business, I thought, oh gosh, what can I do now? I don't know. What have I done? I didn't have like this. I was kind of like a phoenix rising from the ashes. Wait a second, I can help people with their marketing, and I can do it in a supportive way. I can make people feel good about themselves. Because when you feel good about yourself, you actually do things that are productive, right? You don't just sit in a corner and cry like so I decided to, metaphorically hang a shingle and say, I'm gonna be a marketer now. And when authors started calling, I said, okay, there's something to this. And I've been helping authors ever since, and I'm an author now, which was a lifelong dream, and it's been a magical ride.
That was a great overview of your journey to getting here, because it revealed a lot of things that affected you, helped shape who you are, and especially why you do what you do, because we often don't even look at that. Well, how did I get here? Why am I doing this? And it seems like that's pretty clear to you. So then, how do you help authors today? And it's primarily or only authors, is that right?
Well, they don't have to be authors yet, but they want to be an author. So there has to either be a book in your mind or a book in existence. And so what we do is we help you craft a marketing strategy that you can then implement so that you're making money from your book. Because a lot of times book sales are not going to get you rich. Because if you're making a couple dollars from your book, you can sell a gazillion of them and you're still only going to get $2 each. It's not, a ton. So what we do is we look at the whole strategy and how you can leverage your book to create new revenue streams, maybe courses or programs, or to command higher speaking fees, or to get on stages that you can't get on without a book, or to get media opportunities that are going to then help you get even more eyes on your book and on your mission and your business. And so I've also partnered with a publisher, many publishers, so that they'll send me authors who have written books. And I've also just partnered with a publisher so that we can actually take people through the entire system, soup to nuts, go from the idea in your mind to writing it, editing it, publishing it, and marketing it. And that's something that isn't offered. So in one fell swoop, the goal is really to see the book as an opportunity, not an end.
Good.
Because a lot of times, and you know this. I mean, I'm preaching in the choir here with you, but a lot of times, and you can also attest to this. There's a lot of predatory behavior in the publishing industry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I feel fortunate to know you.
People are so desperate
you're a great
to get
person.
Their book out.
Right, right.
Oh, thank
exactly.
You.
You're a great human who does honest work. But, you know, the minute you put the word author on your LinkedIn page, you start to get all these unsolicited emails. Oh, yeah, you're rolling your eyes here. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
I have a client that emails me once a week. Is this real? And it's like, hey, we want to sell 5 million of your books. You just have to give us 5 million.
Yeah.
So one of the things that is part of my mission is to educate, because a lot of times somebody who wants to write a book, they just don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And so people like us are here to tell you. And I'm not going to take your money if I can't help you, but I'm also going to tell you, don't give your money to so-and-so because they're not going to help you either. Here are the things that will help you best. And the reason that I'm such a fan of self-publishing, hybrid publishing, is that you as the author have the control. I had a client who was insistent on publishing with a traditional publisher. You know, she submitted her 35-page treatise to publishers.
Dissertation,
and you know, she got a teeny tiny advance, and then they made her wait 14 months before they published the book. And imagine if this book was about AI. It wasn't, but imagine if it was.
Yes. Oh,
I mean,
completely irrelevant by the time it came out.
Totally irrelevant.
So let's look a little bit more closely. An author comes to you, and I want people to kind of see how this process works so they have a better feel for it. An author comes to you, and they have an idea for a book, and they know that they want to use their book to generate leads and get more business, and they understand that much. So what does that process look like for you working with them?
Sure. So the first is we take you through the book writing process. So all these tips and tricks to actually get the book out of you and on paper. Then we will set you up with an editor, someone who will edit your book, because your book desperately needs an editor, not just one editor, more than one editor. There are different kinds of editing. Then we will get you set up with a book formatter. And this part, until I published my own book, I had no idea how vital that part is. Because the first go-round of what my formatter had given me looked fine to me, but my eyes were virgin eyes. So when I got my colleague to take a look with her veteran eyes, that they're not that old, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She was aghast. She could not believe that this person called themselves formatter. So,
seen it.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. So And you know, examples of like the pages are white versus cream. The spaces are all weird. But we with untrained eyes wouldn't know that stuff. So that's part of it. And also the cover. You need a cover designed and you can't just pull it off Canva. I mean, we judge books by their covers. With people, with books, with people. We really do. So all that is set up, and then you self-publish under your own imprint, and we help you through that. And all the while that that is going on, you are building your marketing foundation so that the minute the book is ready, you are getting media, you are getting speaking opportunities, you are getting podcast guesting opportunities, you're getting real genuine reviews on Amazon because those count. So it's a group hot and one-on-one hybrid, and people can join at any time. And
Okay, that's good to know.
anytime, if you say, you know, this is the month that I'm finally ready, we would love to have you because, you know, it's such a daunting task when it's stuck in your brain. But then once it's all laid out in front of you, you can go slowly and methodically and get it done and know that you have guides who have done this for hundreds of people already, and we know what we're doing.
So what should they expect as far as what will be expected of them? What work will they need to put in? Because I know how this works. An author have they can't just say, here, make me a star.
No, and the people who do that, here, make me a star, unfortunately, they don't always get what they think they're going to get. So, strategy. You will get strategy. You will get support. You will write your book unless you want someone to write it for you, in which case, Chris and I both know a bunch of great ghostwriters who can write that book for you.
Yes.
But if you are ready to do the writing yourself, that's what we'll help you do. The editing is not on your plate. We do that. We will get you the cover and the formatting. It will be done for you. You don't have to do that yourself. The actual setting up of your self-publishing imprint, which is basically your publishing imprint, which means you're your own entity, we help you do that. The marketing, we will show you how, and you can have your VA implement it, or you can implement it yourself. And we will have social media graphics available for you, and we will create a press release for you. We will write that for you and put it out in the media. So there are lots of added bonuses and a bestseller campaign, which lots of people like. It's kind of a nice to have. It's not a marketing
Yeah, there's
plan
a
in and of
reason for it
itself.
if it's
Yeah,
used wisely.
right. It's not a marketing plan in and of itself. So that's those are all the things that we do when somebody comes to us with an idea. And then there are the people who have written a book, nonfiction, children's, and they wrote it a year ago. They wrote it 6, they wrote it 3 years ago, and it's making them feel really bad about themselves because nothing's happened. And they know they spent so much time and money. And they just feel like, oh, what if, why can't, how come? Well, all those questions, I answer them. You can. And now is a good time to do it. So we also have a marketing program just for you to take the book and start gaining that traction. And that also is a group one-on-one hybrid because everybody needs one-on-one attention. But I so strongly believe in the importance of community as an author, because when other people are around going through the same thing as you, or going through something different, but maybe you've experienced it already or whatever, that camaraderie, it really helps make this a much larger endeavor.
And you can learn from what other people are doing. It's not just hanging out either. There's so much. Every time I've been in one of those communities, there's just so much collaborative help. You're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Or, oh, that's a unique way of doing it. Even if it's the same thing, it's just a different spin on it. So I'm glad the community part is included in that.
Thank you. Absolutely. And I so strongly believe in the value of support. I think I mentioned that earlier. So, and not just from me, but from others, because I'm going to have an idea, but I'm one person. And what if somebody knows somebody who can give you something else? So what's that? Your network is your net worth.
Yes. And boy, right? It may, but it's true.
It's a difficult to pronounce cliche as well. I stumbled on
It is. You can't say it fast.
that. She sells seashells by the seashore. No.
See, if you got that much, you should be able to do
If
it.
only. If only.
Oh, okay. So this is great. What is some like parting advice or valuable piece, something that you can leave people with that, this is a little extra important that you should know?
The word marketing is overwhelming.
Mm.
And
Oh, yeah.
it's very overwhelming. And when somebody says, I should market my book, but I don't know how, so I'm just not going to. Let me try to break it down for you so that you can understand how you really. So, marketing basically means telling people about it, right? It's how people get to know about it. Because if they don't know you wrote a book, then they're not going to buy it. It's just the way it is. Like, it's a law, a universal law. I like that. I'm going to use that. So, what you can do is look at your social media. If you're using social media for your marketing already, go ahead and start talking about your book. If you're using email marketing already, go ahead and start talking about your book. And remember to leverage other people's audiences as part of your marketing. Go on podcasts, go on, there are lots of free summits that you can be part of, and the only fee for entrance is sending out emails to your list. It doesn't cost anything, it costs your time. You can let more people know about your book. And I think the final thing I'll say about that is your book doesn't fall off a cliff once it's published. People get so excited about the launch. It's like the rocket goes up. Oh, here we go. Jet launch. Rocket goes up. It doesn't just go right into the water. It goes up into the sky. And the sky's the limit, right? So,
Most of the time.
well, in my book, the sky's the limit. So consider the fact that
Just
you're
thinking of some rocket disasters I've seen on TV.
okay, but let's not think about those. Let's think about metaphoric rockets. So your book rockets in the air, right? So just keep it up there. Don't let it crash into the sea.
Momentum is the fuel.
The jet launch view. I don't
Yeah.
know. I just
Oh, but the what you do is so important. Because again, I tell people, it's like, well, let's say you're a painter and you paint this beautiful painting and you put it up on the wall in your house, and then you wonder why nobody says anything or buys it or is interested in it. It's like, no, you, and it's your duty. It's a moral imperative that if you have created something valuable for other people, do what it takes for them to be aware of it. Don't think that you're being intrusive or annoying or all these, again, head trash, all these ideas we have about marketing. No, you're helping people by letting them know. And guess what? There is a way to do it. There's somebody who can help you and guide you and very specifically help you figure out what your strategy should be. And then you have a group of people to help you and encourage you and keep you accountable. And those pieces, I've seen people fail without them over and over. So what So where can people go to find out more about you?
Oh, well, I am always at vipbookmarketing.com. Everything is available there. You can even get a
Perfect.
Free ultimate book marketing checklist there.
And then people will know even more of, oh, okay, these are the things that I, yes, and they can make a great decision then.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. VIPbookmarketing.com, which I have been to many times.
Yes, you have.
So, Melanie, thank you so much. I super appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks for listening to Pivot Perspectives with your host, Chris O'Byrne. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advice on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we will see you on the next episode.